Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today and joining us now. It is a pleasure to welcome Callum Chase. He is an author, and he has written fiction and nonfiction. He has written a large amount about artificial intelligence, AI, and related technologies. He has a career in business and studied philosophy at Oxford University. His new book, a bestseller, The Economic Singularity, by Callum Chase, The Economic Singularity, Artificial Intelligence, and the Death of Capitalism. Mr. Chase, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Sinclair. It's a pleasure to be here.
I think we need to define some terms to begin with. When we're talking about singularity, often we've heard that referred to as technological singularity. So give us an overview of what we're really dealing with here with technological singularity and economic singularity.
Sure. Yeah, that's a great place to start. So the technological singularity is the idea that in some decades hence, we will create an artificial intelligence, an AI, which has all the cognitive abilities of an adult human. So it'll be as smart as we are and as flexible intellectually as we are. And that because silicon minds can be improved in a way that human carbon minds can't, this machine will quickly become a superintelligence, and humans will become the second smartest species on the planet, which, if a chimpanzee only knew about it, is the uncomfortable position that they're in. I have written about that in another book called Surviving AI, but this book is about the economic singularity, which is a term I've coined for a hugely disruptive event, which I think will happen a long time before the technological singularity. So the economic singularity is the time when it becomes clear that most humans, quite possibly almost all humans, are never going to work again, because anything that a human could do for money can be done cheaper, faster, and better by a machine. And the reason why I and a lot of other people think this is going to happen is that machine intelligence, which has just recently crossed the threshold and become better than us in some important areas, is improving at an exponential rate. It gets twice as good every 18 months or so. And before long, all the things that we do at work, which for most of us is essentially absorbing information, processing it, and then passing it on to somebody else, that can all be done better, faster, and cheaper by a machine. So we're all going to be unemployed. And then, of course, that raises a lot of very interesting questions.
Indeed it does. So economic singularity is coming upon us much faster and therefore is a much more urgent issue that needs to be faced than the technological singularity, but that's coming as well. So let's talk about some of the consequences of the economic singularity, since that seems to be the first one that we need to deal with, a bit more urgent there. You talk about the idea that humans would be largely unemployed, but doesn't somebody still have to run the machines until we get to the technological singularity?
There probably will be some small number of people who are working right up to the technological singularity, but I don't think there'll be many of them. And I think they'll be really just setting very high-level priorities, high-level strategies for the human race as a whole. Because machines are going to be able to repair themselves, to develop themselves, to improve themselves, and to do all of the kind of business-level strategy that humans currently do today. And I think this is coming sooner than most people think. We're going to see in the early 2020s the rapid adoption of self-driving cars, and I think that'll be the thing that wakes everybody up. Because most people, obviously, for perfectly good reasons, aren't thinking about this at the moment. There's no reason why they should. But when they see self-driving cars, they'll realize, crikey, all these drivers who are being laid off, 5 million or so in the States, people who drive for a living, and then a lot of other people whose jobs depend indirectly on that, they'll think, well, if that can happen to drivers, which is, you know, not a very simple job to do, it takes quite a lot of skill to learn how to drive and to be able to navigate all the situations drivers find themselves in, if it can happen to drivers, it will probably happen to me. And I think it'll unfold in the next 20 to 40 years. I think that's the time frame we're going to see the economic singularity hit.
You know, we just saw a driverless taxi the other day in Singapore, and they're talking about driverless taxis in Pittsburgh test trial in the next couple of weeks here. It is happening, and it's happening very fast. But we've seen technology before, and we've seen it in the agricultural revolution, the industrial revolution, and you write about these revolutions in your book. And, of course, there were the Luddites who said, yeah, this is bad. Everything's going to fall apart with all this technology. So is it different this time?
Well, I believe it is. Now, I think this is probably still a minority opinion. Certainly most mainstream economists are not yet convinced, although I detect a turn, and quite a lot of senior politicians now are starting to talk about it. But no, most mainstream economists still think that it is the Luddite fallacy. The Luddites broke machines in the early industrial revolution, and a lot of them got hanged or sent to Australia as a punishment. And in a sense, they were wrong. There was actually a time in the first half of the 19th century when working people suffered pretty badly, and unemployment was quite high because of automation. But it quickly resolved itself, and automation did what it has always done so far, which is to create more wealth in the economy and more jobs. I think it's different this time because the machines this time are coming for our cognitive abilities. You mentioned agriculture, which is the great example of automation. In 1900, about 40% of all Americans who worked on farms, and now it's well below 1%. And it was fine for the humans because they went on to do jobs mostly in cities, which were often more interesting and safer and better paid jobs. But it didn't work out very well for the horse. In 1900, there was about 25 million horses working on farms in America, and now there's pretty much none. And the reason for that is that the horse had nothing else to offer other than its muscle power. Humans had a lot else to offer, but now the machines are coming for those other skills, the cognitive skills which we use in as doctors and lawyers and, dare I say it, radio presenters and writers. And when they can do those jobs for money, that we do for money faster and better and cheaper than us, we're going to be unemployed. Now, that doesn't mean to say that there'll be nothing left for us to do in life. I don't think humans are going to wither away. I think actually this can be a very good development for humans. But one of the reasons why I wrote the book is that I don't think we get the good outcome just by waiting for it to happen. I think we have to manage it, and I think our politicians are going to have to show some leadership when the time is right. It's not right yet. But if we make the transition cleverly, I think we can end up in a truly wonderful world.
The transition periods seem to be particularly difficult to manage. The transitions that the Luddites dealt with, they dealt with it by trying to break machines, not the correct answer. And yet we have managed to come through, and as you say, it's a Luddite fallacy about technology. We still have jobs. People still work in a very technologically advanced world. So you would think that there is some positives at the end, but the transition periods can be very bumpy and displace many, many people along the way. How do we deal with these transition periods and make sure that we're pointed in the right direction?
Yeah, that's the vital question. And of course, we don't really know how this is going to unfold. We don't know what order different industries will be automated. We don't know which people are going to be made unemployment at what time. So it's kind of tricky to plan it. But I think we should be drawing up scenarios and monitoring the economy to see which parts are becoming unemployed. So there's three big transitions that I can see at the moment, and there may well be others, and I'm sure, you know, some of these forecasts will be wrong, because the only thing we know about forecasts is that they're always wrong. We just don't know in which direction. I think the first sort of policy challenge is going to be when people start to realize that there's going to be massive unemployment, when people start to see drivers all being laid off and many of them struggling to find other jobs. A lot of people may think, I don't think I'm going to be laid off for a few years, but I can see it's going to happen soon, as in, you know, within a decade. Maybe I should sell my house. Maybe I should sell up all my assets and be completely liquid. That might be a widespread reaction. And if it is, that will cause a housing crash, the like of which we haven't seen before. So we need to watch out for things like that happening. The second big challenge is going to be when we have to accept, because there's just too many people who are unemployed and unemployable, we have to accept that we have to provide another form of income for those people. They cannot work to get an income, and we can't allow them to starve. So we're going to have something like universal basic income, which is being discussed a bit already, but a lot of people are saying it's a bad idea to introduce it, and I think they're right at the moment. It would be a bad idea to introduce it, but at the time when many people can no longer work, we won't have a choice. We'll have to have something like it. And then the third great challenge is how to deal with the fact that we're likely to end up in a world where a small number of people own the AI and therefore they own everything else. And the rest of us live, hopefully, nice, say, middle-class American standards of living. We enjoy that. But this small number of people own astonishing wealth. And there's a danger that they could effectively speciate, become a separate species. And there's a writer who talks about the gods and the useless being a scenario that could unfold. So I think we need to watch out for that as well in the longer term.
This is a couple of economic issues that you brought up there, and let's run through a few of them. This idea, first off, of universal basic income. There has been talk about this already, and so far it has not been accepted. And you even said right there, this doesn't seem to be the right time for it. What would make the right time for it?
The right time is when there's kind of no alternative other than allowing a lot of people to starve. The reason why it's not the right time now is that essentially our economies can't afford it. And the only way to fund universal basic income without having ridiculously rampant inflation is, in the first instance, through very heavy taxation of the wealthiest members of society. Now, I think when we get to the point when we need it, those people will be making so much money by the ownership of the AI that it really won't be too much of a problem for them to fund the UBI. And I suspect they won't object to it either, because they tend to be people who are more interested in making exciting futures arrive than just amassing lots of money. But it's not the right thing to do now, because any country which tried to introduce universal basic income would hear a giant sucking sound as all the rich people left, and also a lot of poor people arrived. It'll have to be introduced if not a global level, then at least collectively by most of the developed economies to avoid that problem. But I think that it'll only be introduced when there's a crisis. We're quite good as a species at reacting to crises. We can move very fast when it becomes clear we have a real major disruptive issue. And it will be a crisis when a quarter to a half of the population is clearly forever unemployable.
But if we just have income, we're not necessarily working, what do we do? It sounds as if it's kind of a hollow life.
Sure, and that's a very common reaction, and it's an important question. What will people do if they don't go to work anymore? Because for a lot of people, their jobs kind of define them, or at least they provide a first level of definition. Actually, I think humans are very good at finding interesting things to do, and there's a couple of types of people who provide a good evidence for that. One is retired people. I'm sure you know quite a few retired people, I certainly do, who
sure
say they're very, very busy and they have no idea how they managed to fit a job in before they retired. And, you know, they're not necessarily just playing golf. They actually spend a lot of time learning and traveling.
Hang on just a moment. We'll take a quick break and we'll continue this conversation. It's an intriguing conversation, really, and an intriguing book, The Economic Singularity: Artificial Intelligence and the Death of Capitalism, The Economic Singularity by Callum Chase. And we'll continue in just a moment. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're talking with Callum Chase, C-H-A-C-E, the new book, The Economic Singularity. And if you've wondered about AI, artificial intelligence, how this might change the world, well, this is the book that really looks at that and also looks at the economic impact. We were talking about how artificial intelligence and technological singularity might change how people work. You brought up the idea of a universal basic income. Also, this idea that there will be some people who will rise and control the economy and the technology, and then others who are really kind of useless. There are several scenarios. Which one do you think we should be headed toward?
I think we should aim for an economy of radical abundance where machines are doing all the work and so humans aren't, and the machines are very efficient and they're producing all the goods and services we need very cheaply and at high quality, and humans are getting on with the important business of life, which is playing and learning and exploring and traveling and having fun and socializing. And we were talking earlier about retired people being a class of people who provide evidence that this is possible. Another type of person who proves it's possible are aristocrats, who in Europe for centuries didn't work. Some of them did. Some of them ran their estates, or if they were in a country which had an empire, they may have gone off to run bits of the empire. But most of them simply didn't work, and they lived lives of leisure. But they were well-educated. They were the best-educated people in society. And they were responsible for most of the intellectual and artistic achievements of European society.
Directly or indirectly?
Directly or indirectly, yes. Sometimes they were sponsors of artisans who made the advances, but often it was the aristocrats themselves, because they were the educated people and they were the people who had the time. So I think those two classes of people show that even if we don't have jobs, we can still work, we can still do projects, we can still occupy ourselves interestingly and productively.
And what needs to be done to point us in this right direction at this time? What should we be doing now that we're not doing to go to the more desirable scenarios in the future?
Yeah, I think the first thing is to get as many people up to speed with what may happen. What I'm describing is not cast in stone as a necessary future, and it might be that I'm quite wrong, and it might be that we will always keep doing jobs because there are natural barriers to how AI can advance, and they won't take all the jobs. I don't think that's true, but maybe it is. I think, though, that it would be very helpful to have as many people in society as possible aware of what may come and thinking about it so that it doesn't arrive as a big shock. For instance, when people start reading reports in the papers saying that most drivers are now unemployed and an awful lot of them are not working because they cannot find replacement jobs, it would be very bad if there was a panic as a result of that. And if these ideas arrive in people's laps all of a sudden, then there's more likely to be a panic. So that's something that I think really we should try to avoid. And then the second thing is, I think we should have some institutions which are watching out for these developments and drawing up scenario plans, working out what are the better and the less good outcomes which could happen, and working out how to nudge society towards the better outcomes.
Intriguing, intriguing book, The Economic Singularity, Artificial Intelligence and the Death of Capitalism. Exactly when the change comes, I don't know, but we're about to see some huge changes. Callum Chase writes about them. He is also the best-selling author of Surviving AI. Callum, would you like to send us to a website or anything?
Sure. I blog at www.pandorasbrain.com, pandoras-brain.com, and the books are all at Amazon in paperback and ebook and also audio format.
And really a book that you won't want to put down. It is intriguing, The Economic Singularity by Callum Chase. Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you, Sinclair.